Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motor Studio is mobile today in Columbus, Ohio. Jack and I had a pretty good laugh on the phone earlier today about our last trip to Columbus, which, if it wasn't for one very intelligent police officer with some savvy, we'd still be out there. We'd still be there. Never would have gotten out of here. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served the Valley for decades. Best price, best insurance, fits your budget. And if there's a claim, they jump all over it because they know that you're going through distress and you need to have it solved. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for back to the AFC Championship game in Denver. A dramatic finish.
Mercy to the tie. Snap to Brady. All that pressure. Brady rolls his up. Brady throws. Pass to
And Dave Logan with the call, the former Browns wide receiver, former Colorado wideout, who's the play-by-play voice of the Denver Broncos. And he'll be calling the Super Bowl on KOA Radio after the Broncos won yesterday 20-18. It is amazing how there have been many who have been critical of Tom Brady's performance yesterday. Wow, I tell you, it didn't seem the same. It's amazing when you have a patchwork offensive line, you don't seem the same. Stunning, isn't it?
Well, the outside pass rush for Denver was unstoppable. They had no way to keep them off of those tackles.
DeMarcus Ware camped out in the back.
I think Bob gets my point.
Yes.
You don't have a great offensive line, you'd be amazed how you can't execute your plays.
Would that be an analogy or something like that?
Yes, it is. It is an analogy of, yes, it is.
I'm just taking it one step further. I thought the speed of Denver's defensive ends were just, and outside backers were just too much.
I think you're complicating the point that Steve was trying to make, Kevin, actually.
Their offensive line stinks, and they were patching it together, hopefully getting something that could actually create a block. I understood that.
I gave him the signal, Steve and everyone. Over his head, I think.
Bob.
Yes, Steve.
Okay, Bob. Okay.
What am I missing?
Okay. What other team in Pennsylvania had the same problem?
Well, can you think of another team locally that's gone through some of the same offensive line issues?
No. No.
Let's move on.
Please.
Let's move on. Because anytime you have to explain it in great detail, maybe it wasn't that good.
Yes. All right.
You'll get no argument from me about that.
I'll take the blame for that.
Yes.
All right. Wow. Yep. Okay. We'll get to other things in a moment. We got a game coming up here tonight here in Columbus. It'll be Penn State in action taking on Ohio State. Adam Jardy is the beat writer for Ohio State basketball, and bring him in here to talk a little bit about the Buckeyes.
It's been an up-and-down year for Ohio State. Is that a fair opening for me?
No, that's probably the nicest way to put it. They've definitely had a couple of big games for them, a few things that have gone their way, and most notably a Kentucky win in Brooklyn, but you know, when they've had to go on the road, it's been a significant struggle for them. And as the schedule has gotten more difficult here in the last week or two, the going's been much more difficult for them as well. So, you know, kind of in a patch right now where they're in the upper half of the Big Ten at 4-3, but could be facing some tough reality here in the next couple of weeks as the schedule gets even tougher.
On top of that, though, when you talked about them on the road, at home, why have they been a better home team? Just nature?
I think some of it's probably just some of the opponents that they played. I mean, you look at in the Big Ten, for example, at home, you know, they played Minnesota, Illinois, and Rutgers. So, I mean, you no matter who you are in the Big Ten, I think you probably feel good playing any of those teams at home. And then it's funny, then you look at, you know, they've been pretty decent at home lately, but non-conference, they went out and they lost at home to Texas Arlington. They lost at home to Louisiana Tech. You know, it's a team that you don't know on any given night exactly what you're going to get from them.
One guy I feel like they do get something from all the time because he plays his own game is Cam Williams. How good of a shooter is from the edge is Cam Williams?
I think he's getting better, and that's the crazy thing, because he's shooting better than 50% from three. And
that's,
you know,
scary.
The guy, yeah, well, and what's interesting is it's a guy that comes off the bench for them, and you know, his season really turned. They had a freshman guard named Austin Grandstaff who was recruited to be a shooter and came in with a really good reputation and transferred out after 10 games. Just wasn't getting enough playing time and just kind of said, that's it, I'm done, I'm out of here. And he was really battling Cam for playing time. As soon as Austin transferred out, it seemed like something kind of flipped in Cam, and he wasn't looking over his shoulder for you know, am I going to lose minutes to this guy? How much is this guy pushing me? And he was really kind of able to just be himself. And he went from, I would say those first 10 games, you knew every game he was going to hit probably one shot, maybe two shots. He wasn't going to get a lot of shots, but they're finding ways to get him the ball now because he's a guy that can bring them some offense. And now what will be interesting to see is how teams work to start taking some things away from him, because if you look at the game they played at Purdue on Thursday night, he had 14 points all in the first half. And the second half, they locked on him and just didn't let him get open. And I think he had one shot in the second half, and they're winning at halftime. They end up going on to lose by double digits. So, you know, a guy that's still kind of figuring out when teams are really keying on him, what he needs to do to get open. But when he is open, I mean, he's clearly the best shooter on this team.
Yeah, he's one of the top five or six shooters in the entire conference in terms of pure shot, in my opinion, based on what I've watched either in person or on tape so far.
Yeah,
when
he's fun to watch.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's a lot of fun to watch. And I want to ask you about Lyles. Typical freshman in a lot of ways. What are the good parts of his game, and what are some parts that still need to develop at him?
Well, I think the upside with him, the good parts of his game are the fact that he's one guy on this team that can create some of his own offense. He can take the ball, he can drive the basket, he can score. He doesn't always take care of the ball all that well, and he's a guy that when teams are really keying on him, they can take him out of his comfort zone. I saw it early in the season. They played at Connecticut. They lost by 20, and they just ran Jaquan off the court. And after the game, talking to players, talking to Kevin Ollie, they were saying, you know what, we knew that if we could take him out of the game, that Ohio State couldn't function, and that was exactly what happened. And then we saw that again Thursday night at Purdue. You know, he had 2 points. He missed all of his field goals. He had two from the line. Had 4 turnovers, was basically a non-factor, and 5'9" freshman backup AJ Harris clearly outplayed him. So the biggest thing with Jaquan is that he's the kind of guy that when he makes a mistake or two, it really kind of feeds on him, like mentally, internally, where he has a hard time bouncing back from making a simple mistake. And so that's kind of one of the biggest things the coaches seem to be working on him with, is that, okay, you know, you just dribbled the ball off your foot and went out of bounds, and that cost us a possession. Get on to the next play. Get a stop. Do it right the next time. And that's just, I think some of that's just, you know, freshman.
That makes him 18 or 19.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they getting consistency out of Loving, Bates, And so are they getting some consistency out of those two, or have they been part of the inconsistency?
Well, they've been a big part of it, and especially as of late. Kata Bates-Diop, he was scoreless at Purdue. The only reason that Ohio State was in that game as late as it was that Cam Williams had such a big first half for them. But Kata Bates-Diop has been, he's their second leading scorer, I believe. He's been scoreless in two Big Ten games. One of them, granted, they played at Northwestern, and he got in foul trouble pretty early on, two fouls in the first minute and a half, and never quite got in the flow in that game. But he only attempted two shots against Purdue the other night. And so, like, that's a guy that has put up 20-plus points in games earlier in the season, a guy that he's very long, he's very athletic, but it just wasn't there for him on Thursday night. And so, he's a guy that Thad Matta has specifically pinpointed as they need a more consistent, aggressive approach from him. They know it's in him. He's just not bringing it every night. So, they need him functioning at a high level. And then a guy like Mark Loving, on the other night he had finished with 9, I think, but he only had 2 at halftime.
Right.
It's just a guy that he took some tough shots for them at the end that helped keep them in the game. But, he's been their leading scorer basically all season. But those numbers just kind of keep dipping a little bit as we've gotten into Big Ten play. He's not shooting the ball as well as I think anybody expected him to. He's a guy that will put it on the floor and try to create some things. But, it's been a tougher go for him the last 2-3 weeks. And when whether we're talking about Kata, we're talking about Jaquan, or talking about Loving, Thad Matta has consistently said this year that there's just not much room for error on this team. There's a very slim margin for error. They need all these guys playing at basically optimum levels or they can't win. And so when you go to Purdue and you get no points from Kata Bates-Diop and Mark Loving has 2 in the first half, finishes with 9, their starting lineup the other night, Jayshon Tate had 17, the rest of the starters at 16 combined. Right. So, they need everybody contributing at a high level for them to have any sort of success this year.
Well, as somebody who's broadcast Penn State basketball for 34 years, I understand margin of error. Okay, so I do understand it. All right,
preaching to the choir here.
I understand, but I know exactly. But all kidding aside, and jokes and sarcasm and so forth aside, that does play a big role. Margin of error is a huge thing now on the court, whether it's youth or whether it's depth or so forth, it plays a big role. The guy that you just mentioned, to me, is the toughest single matchup for Penn State, and that's Jayshon Tate. What makes Tate a tough matchup for most teams, and what kind? And is he as good for his size, as good an offensive rebounder as you've seen him late?
Oh, he's so much fun to watch. He's so much fun to talk to. He has a zest for life, I would say. He's got a passion for the game. He's only 6'4". He's going up against AJ, Caleb Swanigan the other night at Purdue. And aside from the obvious, you look at him and he's shorter. He doesn't play like he's that short. He doesn't play like he's giving up 5-6 inches to guys that he has to guard. He understands the game very well. He knows when to pick his moments. He doesn't get a shot blocked very often for playing down in the post. He knows, how to find his teammates. He kind of went through a rough stretch, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, where he wasn't shooting the ball very well. He wasn't getting many. He wasn't scoring much. He was kind of a non-factor. It looked like teams were really kind of taking him out of the game. But he's what's interesting with him is he's almost the ultimate garbage player, where you don't necessarily draw up a play for him. You're not going to win a game if he's trying to shoot from outside a whole lot, or if he's putting the ball in his hands a lot. But he's a guy that just finds his way to the ball. He finds his way in good positions, and more often than not, he's able to finish them. And then, defensively, he's smart. He's quick with his feet. He's good with his hands. He knows how to get, how to frustrate guys that are much taller than him. Now, with the new rules this year and how they're calling the game, he's a guy that finds himself in foul trouble a lot, and that's been a big problem for him too. If he's not on the court a lot, it's hard for him to get that flow for a game and to find those garbage opportunities because he's watching it from the bench. But, I would almost make him the team MVP at this point this season just because of what he brings on a consistent night. And honestly, more often than not, after a embarrassing loss or a tough loss or a win, he's just as likely to be out talking to the media. He's a guy that's kind of willing to be accountable for this team and willing to be a face and a voice. And that goes a long way.
Well, he's not an NBA player. I mean, he'll play somewhere, but he's not an NBA. But he's the kind of college basketball player that helps teams win. I mean, that's how I've always viewed.
So yeah, that's a great way to look at him.
Hey, Adam, absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing you over at the arena tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Adam Girardi from the Columbus Dispatch. We'll come back. Kevin's complete analysis of the interview, as only he can do it, in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
If you're not insured with the Purdy Insurance Agency, you may not be getting the most out of your insurance coverage. Locally owned and family operated for over 90 years, the experienced team at Purdy will compare your rates and coverage among a number of nationally recognized insurers to make sure you're getting the most out of your insurance dollars. And once you join the Purdy family of customers, you'll experience service and claims handling that's second to none. Call 1-800-677-2478 to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
You're on for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kevin made the announcement. Took a while to get there, but Kevin made the announcement earlier today. I mean, Bob, you put a stopwatch on it. How long did it take him for him to get to the part where, like he said, we're carrying the Phillies?
90 seconds.
I had it.
90 seconds.
I had it at 8 minutes, Bob.
It's all about the build-up. It's a build-up.
Sound like a Bob Picozzi Sports Center.
I like Bob Picozzi.
he was the leading rebounder for 17 years in the NBA, and he won't play tonight. Okay, good. Why'd you tell me on the top? He's not playing tonight, and he's out of the game. Okay, great, fabulous. Okay.
Hey, before we get to the bottom of the hour, I wanted to get your thoughts on your friend Dick Girardi, who had an interesting article in the Daily News today that goes back to what we've been talking about.
His article about the cholesterol was better. That was to me is what journalism is about these days, the ability to sit there and read something and feel like you're living it. As for the Sixers, they are miles away from contending. And let's start with this. The Sixers lack a lot of things, all right? But okay, what's one primary thing the Sixers lack right off the top if you really know basketball?
Talent.
They don't have any two-way players. But then no. Okay, let's.
I was being smart. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. They don't have two-way players. All right, and that's the key. I mean, when you don't have two-way players on your roster, guys that can play defense at one end and translate and go right into offense at the other end, they have some guys that are really good defensive players and limited offensively. They have some really good offensive players that are limited defensively. They don't have two-way players. All right, for whatever reason, you know, I think analytics are an important piece to the puzzle. But analytics are not the puzzle, right? Analytics do not complete the puzzle for you. Analytics are a part of the puzzle that opens the door for you to get answers. For example, when I sit there and I broadcast a game, I'll get analytics that allow me to look at the last four game trending to tell me, for example, the left tackle is giving up more hurries, more hurries, more sacks than anybody else. In other words, analytics tell me he's struggling statistically. Right now, I want to pop in the tape. Okay, what's allowing him to struggle? Are they overloading and blitzing on that side, and it really isn't him? But he's getting statistically caught for it? Or is he beaten one-on-one and the analytics justify what I'm seeing on the tape? That's what you want to look at. You need to have the ability to look at talent and use analytics as a supplement that then give you keys as to what you're now looking for on that tape. Right? Does the tape justify what the number says? For example, you may see that a quarterback on the route tree misses here, 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 and here. All right? But guess what? Now I want to watch the tape. Okay, you know what I'm watching for? Is he running the right routes? Maybe it's not the quarterback. Maybe they shouldn't be throwing to the receivers running the wrong routes. Same thing in basketball. You know, there's certain analytics that tell you which five guys play best together on the floor. All right, that's fine. But if you don't have, through your scouting department, a handle on two-way basketball players, and you have a bunch of specialists out there, which is what the Sixers have, they don't have two-way basketball players. I'll give you a good example. Jahlil Okafor. Jahlil Okafor is a skilled NBA offensive player. Jahlil Okafor is not a very good defensive basketball player. Okay, the Sixers, you can use all the analytics you want, but they don't have players that translate at both ends of the floor on the roster. They need to start finding them, and analytics won't tell you that. Scouting will.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. We're in Columbus, Ohio today. Our thanks to Bob Buehner for being on the show today, because the talk about everything that happened legally last week was important for everybody to get Bob's perspective on. Our thanks to Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch, the beat writer who covers Ohio State basketball. We've got the game for you tonight at 7, 6:30 the airtime. Our thanks to Kevin for finally getting around to mentioning the Phillies being on WKOK.
Notice how he downplayed
that.
That
took a long time.
Build up.
Yeah.
Build up. It's all about anticipation. It's called marketing, guys.
Steve, three things to talk about.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, is this all part of Kevin's memo here?
It's a lengthy memo.
Here's the memo. Let's get through it.
It's a really good memo.
Very quickly here. Okay, we already took care of the recap that Bob did, which was great.
Right.
Championship Sunday, Kevin did not draw the analogy to Penn State, but that's okay. That's just an off-air topic now.
Yep.
Patriots couldn't handle any rush. Up the middle, outside, anything. And you look at the protection that Cam Newton had in his game. On the touchdown pass to Philly Brown of 86 yards, the protection was unbelievable. He had all the time to scan and find. Brady never had that yesterday because they were outstanding, and they also did a great job of changing up coverages dramatically yesterday, which they had trouble reading, and the Patriots receivers did not get separation throughout the course of the day. They just couldn't get separation based on what Denver was doing. It really was an impressive plan where Wade Phillips, in a lot of ways, was the MVP of yesterday's game for Denver. Carolina's just flat out better than Arizona. And for Arizona, this is where not having Tyrann Mathieu showed up yesterday dramatically, that X factor that you can't account for. And Cam Newton really is that good. He really is that good. Where his ability to run his ability to throw the football with great velocity, showed some touch yesterday. Olsen's been outstanding as a tight end. They've been installed as 4.5-point favorites for the game. They deserve it because I think their defense is very good. Thomas Davis did break his arm yesterday. He did have surgery today. They're going to do aggressive rehab, and he says he is going to play in the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Luke Kuechly is, well, yeah.
Good
luck
with
that.
Thomas
Davis has been through it. He's been three ACLs, Bob. You know what? I'm rooting like heck for him to make it.
We all
I
are,
hope
yep.
he makes it because his career has been dashed apart by one ACL injury after another, and I hope he makes it. I think he will. So that will be interesting. We're going to get Joe Person, it looks like, back on the show from the Charlotte Observer. Nikki Javala from the Denver Post back on the show, so we'll be able to preview the game from their perspective. We'll do that next week.
By the way, Steve, just want to throw this in, that the overnight ratings are in for the AFC Championship game. Drew a 31.8, a 9% increase from last year. And the 31.8 is the highest for an AFC Championship game since the Broncos-Browns John Elway drive 29 years ago.
That's higher than any of the Steeler games. All right.
Steeler game would have been higher than that if they were in it.
Had the Steelers been in it, my goodness. Double those ratings.
Oh, absolutely. Brady, Manning, Joey Porter.
The later game, by the way, wasn't as strong, a 26.8 overnight, but still up 19% from last year's Patriots-Colts game in that time slot.
That actually has happened now the last couple of years where the night game has not been the higher-rated game.
Well, people watch the first game and they get football just fatigue for after a while.
Well, I think part of it, too, Bob, is that the game got out of hand so quickly. I think that had a lot to do. It was 17-0 in a blink of an eye, and you could tell Carson Palmer didn't have it yesterday.
Well, Carson had, Steve, a really high completion rate. He threw so many interceptions to Carolina. His percentage of catches was phenomenal.
Yeah, the guys catching the ball was up there. It just turned out they weren't all wearing red jerseys.
No.
Let's see. Cam Newton, as he turned the corner from his college issues, also some feely showboats.
Well, let me go into further detail with that, right, Steve. Let me go into further detail. Okay. There's a lot of people that don't like Cam Newton because of the history and feel that he showboats. Is it showboating or is it a guy having fun doing his job?
Look, you know what? Over the years, this is an entertainment business. All right. Now, am I old school and I want to see the guy hand the football to the referee and act like he's been there before?
Yes.
Sure. But you know what? I also understand that it's also entertainment. And is he showboating? You know what? His fan base loves it. He's at home. It's all part of the show. And guess what? He can back it up. He backs it up with one great performance after another. And I think that, you know what? Anybody who's talking about that is now nitpicking on a guy who was the MVP of the league this year. His issues, I'll say this. The Carolina thing has been great for him. It's the longest he's stayed in one place in a long time.
I think he's found a home there in Charlotte.
You know what? But he's made himself into an NFL quarterback. He is not just a guy that runs. He's not just a big guy who throws the ball hard. He has developed himself into a legitimate, major league, well-rounded NFL quarterback.
Steve,
on a team, I'm not done yet.
Go ahead. Right. He's on a roll.
Okay. He's on a rant.
All right. No, I'm not on a rant.
He's on a roll.
I'm kidding.
I'm explaining. You have to understand how good this guy is, because he lost his number one receiver, his top target, Kelvin Benjamin, in the preseason for the year. And you'd never know it. That's amazing. right? The Steelers lose Antonio Brown and there's no passing game.
There was a passing game. I respectfully disagree.
I think he was just taunting you there, Kevin.
I hope so.
I thought the drops by Brian. I thought the drop by Whedon. I thought the drop by Heath Miller. I thought all went a long way to you winning that game. That's right. You didn't win the game.
Yeah. Darn.
What I was going to ask you was he. What makes it? What are the Carolina Panthers doing differently than these other quarterbacks that have gotten injured and teams that don't want to run this read option style offense, Kevin, from time to time with him?
Kevin, look how big the man is.
That's what I'm thinking, but I wanted the expert opinion.
260 pounds. Okay, I want to go back to the story that I've told several times, but I'll relay it again. We were kidding around. Jack and I are at the Rose Bowl, and there's plexiglass in between the booths. And Jack says to me, he says, "You want to know why I stuck around 12 years in the NFL?" And he points over to the booth to our left where the USC broadcasters are. And Paul McDonald, the former USC quarterback, former Cleveland Browns quarterback, was in the booth because he's the analyst for USC football. And he's about 6'2", about 185, 190 pounds. He said, "For 12 years, Steve, I hit that." He says, "If I had to hit Roethlisberger all the time, I don't know what would happen." Roethlisberger is a huge man at 260 pounds. 260 pounds. And moves. My respect for Roethlisberger as a quarterback is off the charts, as you all know. Kevin kind of doesn't like him from time to time, but that's
he's
let's
fickle.
Face it. Without him, you got zilch.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
And he's a large man that's hard to hit. He holds on to the ball for a long time because he can hold on to the ball for a long time because he absorbs a lot. Now let's get to Cam Newton. That's the same body type, except a better athlete in the body type than even Ben is. And I think Ben's a really good athlete. Ben's a real, especially younger Ben Roethlisberger, the way he can move, get out of the pocket, buy time, just brilliant the way he could do that using his athleticism. And Cam Newton is very much like a young Ben Roethlisberger in a lot of ways, except I think he's a better pure runner than Roethlisberger is. But he can absorb more contact than a Robert Griffin III because he is built like a brick house. I mean, look at him. He's 250 to 260 pounds and moves like a gazelle. He is a freak of nature. And that's sometimes it's just that easy to describe it. You don't get that body type like that all the time that can move the way he does. And he's just completely different than other people. That's why, you can talk about how he runs the read option versus other people. He can absorb contact inside that the other guys can't just because he's in a lot of ways, when he runs, he's like that really good running back that really good running backs deliver punishment. They deliver punishment. They don't get punished. They deliver punishment. Where we talk about how a running back gets better on carry 20 and 25, the great ones. You want to know why? Because they've been pounding the hell out of you for how many hours? Okay? Everybody thinks of them getting hit. They're delivering punishment as they go, and they become difficult for you to tackle in the game because they've been punishing you all day. Cam Newton runs the way he delivers punishment as a game goes. He's a tough guy to bring down.
Steve,
and he's energetic, and I don't, the showboat thing, I could care less. It's all part of the entertainment part, and guess what? He backs it up. Sorry, Bob.
No, Steve, I was going to say, if you remember when you and I were growing up and watching the NFL, remember that Dallas Cowboys guy, Bob Hayes, the world's fastest human? And then you remember Merlin Olsen and Rosie Greer and players like that? Well, that's what Cam Newton is. He's a combination of the size of Rosie Greer with the speed of Bob Hayes.
Right.
They don't make him. They didn't apparently make him like that back in the '60s and '70s. But now, I think Jack Ham is right. He might not have had as long a career if he was playing against right. Cam Newton and Big Ben every other Saturday in the NFL, where they're the quarterbacks. It's a
Look for example now at the quarterbacks of years gone by. Joe Montana is not a big man.
No,
he is not a big man. Steve Young really isn't a big guy. A little bit bigger, but not really. Bart Starr was not a big man. Yeah, Brett Favre, not really. I mean, they may have been taller, you know, that 6'2", 6'4", range, but weren't thick across the chest, thick in the legs the way Ben Roethlisberger is, the way Cam Newton happens to be. And it's a different body type than years gone by. It's just completely different. And Newton is a freak of nature. I mean, Peyton Manning, I mean, I've been around Peyton Manning once in my lifetime. Peyton Manning is a big man. He is 6'5". He is a big man. You could tell he's a physically strong man, but he's not built. Manning is what, 230 to 240?
At best.
Maybe, right?
I think, yeah.
But he's not 260 like this guy.
And it's all muscle, that extra 20 pounds difference between them. Newton's just a mass of muscle.
Right, and he is. So it's completely different.
Reminds me of Kevin in his youth, actually.
And with that, we need to take a break.
Yeah, it was all upper body, and then it dropped a foot.
Yeah, exactly.
That was my problem.
I think you're lying. I'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. Great to have you with us. The last thing is Kevin bringing up John O'Korn, the transfer. Michigan specializes in transfer quarterbacks.
It seems that way.
Well, you know what? Everybody's doing this. Everybody is doing this. He is out of Huntington, very close to us.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I brought it up is, he had a pretty good season at Houston with 3,000 yards passing, but how does that translate to the Big Ten?
So it's a completely different offense.
See, that's what I think too. And and ESPN has him as the best transfer grab.
Well, you know what? When you throw for 3,000 yards and 28 touchdowns in your freshman year, at least you know the guy knows how to play. He's been through some game speed.
Yeah.
But it's a different offense. But he's got good size. He's 6'4", 205 pounds. I've got him on my chart, and I've had him on my chart the entire time because I knew that he was going to be the heir apparent. I just knew he had to sit out this year. And that's fine. Anything that happens with Michigan now brings with it instant panic from the populace.
Sure.
Instant
panic.
It does.
People get all up in arms.
Well, Kevin, okay, what's the climate right now? A player, a defensive tackle, decommits and decides to go to Michigan. Okay? Oh, the sky's falling. But I spent a lot of time in my life around Joe Paterno. One of the most important parts of this job, whether it's an interview or just sitting there with someone or doing a broadcast, is listening. Listening is so important. Jack Ham says something, it changes the tone of the broadcast. Dick Girardi says something, it changes the tone of the broadcast. Right? A James Franklin, a Patrick Chambers, a Bill O'Brien, a Joe Paterno says something, an Ed DeCellis, whatever. You listen to what they have to say. Because they're there, they get it, you need their perspective, and so forth. Something Joe told me a long time ago that has always stuck with me, And I talked about it 2 weeks ago, and a guy then called and criticized me about it because of some HR thing. I do not get worked up about people you don't have. I concentrate on people I do have. And that if you start getting worked up about who you don't have, what does that matter? What does that help you? That doesn't help you at all. Worry about who you do have and take care of the people that you do have. And that's in the end, that's what it comes down to. I'm going to give you three really good examples here in recruiting that all came in at the same time. Derek Williams was the consummate five-star recruit. Some said he was the best player in the country. Derek Williams came to Penn State and had himself a great four-year career at Penn State. A really good wide receiver, an excellent punt returner, excellent kick returner. They used him on reverses. They put him in the Wildcat. They used Derek Williams, and they made sure that they figured out ways to get Derek Williams all sorts of touches in his career, and he was dynamic and outstanding. Yet he was probably the third best receiver on the team in terms of being a pure wide receiver. Derek was more of a body catcher than he was a hands catcher. The other two guys were Jordan Norwood and Deion Butler. So now you have the five-star in Derek Williams, who fulfilled, I think, every expectation you could ask a five-star to fulfill. And Derek Williams ended up with the Detroit Lions in the NFL and cashed some checks in that league for about 3 or 4 years. Deion Butler came here as a walk-on, one-star kid, played corner his first year on scout team. That next spring transferred him to wide receiver, had a great college career, and then played for both the Seattle Seahawks and the San Diego Chargers. Jordan Norwood, okay, Joe told the staff and insisted that they recruit him. The staff didn't want to recruit him. He insisted. I've watched him play basketball. I've watched him play football. We're recruiting him. They decide to recruit him, and they gray-shirt him, which means he came in the January after his class came in. He had a great career. I hope you enjoy watching Jordan Norwood in Super Bowl 50, because he'll be starting a wide receiver for the Denver Broncos and returning punts. Three different paths to the NFL. A five-star, a walk-on, and a gray shirt. They all made it. Once you get there, then it's up to you to take advantage of it. Those three all had different paths to getting there. All three made it. Worry about who you have, not who you don't have. Bob, it was an absolute pleasure.
Have a great game tonight. Say hello to my friend Girardi for me.
I will. And Kevin, great announcement on the Phillies today. Well done.
I'm looking forward to it myself.
I think it's one of the great things we've done. I'm thrilled about it.